And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today is Wednesday, May 24th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. You can listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Talk to us on Facebook. We want to hear from you. Give us a listen now as we're going through the world of sports. We've got a lot going on, guys. It's been a hell of a week. We have a PGA champion in Brooks Koepka. We have a Preakness winner in National Treasure. NHL NBA Finals almost here. Yankees and Mets playing better, sort of, maybe, kind of. And we're going to talk a little baseball. And we actually have an NFL football rule change to talk about. Let's get it going. So Brooks Koepka is the PGA champion. He won by 2 strokes over Victor Hovland. It's his 3rd PGA championship, his 5th major, and by winning his 5th, there's only 20 guys that have won 5, so he's now put himself in a bracket at the moment. Kev, talk to me about some golf.
Well, if you listened last week to the podcast, Darren and I were pretty big on Koepka. We thought he'd be up there at 18-1. Too bad we didn't bet him.
Or at least I didn't bet him.
Not smart enough to take my own advice on Brooks Koepka there. You know, he started off slow, and then about halfway through the second round, he really started to take off, put up a great 3rd round. He shot a 4-under on the Saturday round, which is 2 strokes better than everybody else. That gave him the cushion. Sunday, Hovland hung around for a bit, but you know, I never felt like Koepka was in big trouble at all in that final round. I thought Koepka won without a lot of pressure. The only two guys close were Hovland and Scheffler. I think what's interesting is that is his 3rd PGA. Since they went to stroke play in 1958, only two guys have won more PGAs. Jack's got 5, Tiger's got 4. Pretty damn good company there if you could put yourself up with those two guys. Coming out of it, I think what's more interesting to talk about with Koepka, with his defection to the LIV Tour, he's going to be up there around number 2 in the Ryder Cup points. Top 6 get automatic spots. What's this going to do to Team USA when you've got a lot of the PGA Tour guys out there and you've got Koepka, who, you know, still going to be a lot of hard feelings among people, among the players, you know, between the two tours. That's going to be interesting to keep an eye on as we get towards, you know, later in the year in the Ryder Cup. But I think there is a bigger story in the PGA this weekend. Reason be glued. Darren, I'll let you cover that part.
Michael Block.
Woo!
Leading. Well, by the way, anytime you see a hole-in-one where it lands right in the cup, it's amazing. And then you don't know it, and Rory has to come up and tell you you did it, gives you the hug. Rory seemed like he was his biggest supporter all week. This is a man that made $2,340 on the tour, on a couple of small tours in California. This week he made over $288,000, you know, and he got the automatic call-in for the invite for this week's tournament. He's automatically qualified for the PGA next year. You know, it was amazing to watch. You couldn't not be rooting for Michael Block. The one thing I'll say about Saturday's golf, by the way, I felt like I was watching the three of us play. There were guys chunking them, guys not getting out of the sand, guys hitting grounders, guys hitting them like hitting shots like 140 that they normally hit 190. It was brutal. The conditions, especially early on, were ridiculous. Those early guys had no shot. But the excitement, I thought, was Michael Block. I just thought it's just fun to see a guy that get the opportunity and not only get the opportunity, but take advantage of it. Kev, I mean, I was glued to him. I couldn't stop watching him.
Yeah. I wish I was home for late part of the round. Went to the Met game Sunday night. I want to talk about my experience at the Mets game, when we talk about the Mets later. But my goodness, what an incredible story. Like you posted on Facebook, move over 10 cup. We have a new best shot.
It was really cool. And, you know, a lot of people seem to jump on that one, which wasn't bad, but I just thought it was great. One thing I'll say about Koepka with the Ryder Cup, just, you know what? If you qualify for the Ryder Cup off playing four tournaments against a bunch of guys that are playing 20, you deserve to go. I'm sorry.
Oh, no doubt.
And you know what? You can have hard feelings all you want, but you've had 20 tournaments or 18 tournaments. If this guy finishes top six, he goes. That's what it is. And it's sour grapes for you guys not being able to beat this guy.
It's going to be interesting more to me. No one, and maybe the European team's going to be a little different too this year with some of their LIV golfers. You don't know. But you always felt like Team Europe was always about, you know, beat USA. And Team USA, you know, especially when you had some of the friction between Tiger and Phil for a long time, mm-hmm. you know, they seem to warm up a little bit towards the end of both of their runs on the Ryder Cup. This is a team competition. You've got the four ball matches, you know, you've got partners. You have to make sure you get out there and you can work within the team as well. It's not an individual. And Ryder Cup seems to be the one where, you know, you get your first pairing or two out there and they start getting some momentum, it carries over. We've seen it, especially on Sundays. We've seen where you get a couple of early points and you start seeing your flags up or there on the scoreboard. You've got to put any personality clashes that might be there, you have to put aside when you're on the Ryder Cup.
Well, you saw 2 years ago with DeChambeau and Koepka, they found the way to do it. They found the way to play together. They actually congratulated each other somewhat. They hate each other.
Yeah.
But you look at a guy that's always been a good Ryder player like Patrick Reed, who's not going to qualify. But Reed's always been that pro-American monster guy. I mean, he played well with Spieth. He's played well with everybody. He's partnered up really well overall. It's just you're right, though. And I like the Ryder as much as any major I watch. I love the Ryder Cup.
Oh, yeah.
I'm addicted to the Ryder Cup when it plays. And that's during the NFL season, which is not always easy. So, but I get your point, Kev. You know, G, any thoughts on the golf this weekend, bro?
Well, so Brooks Koepka is 33 years old. He now has 5 majors under his belt. The next major really starts separating him amongst the best of the best. I mean, at this point, there are 20 golfers out there that have won 5 or more, right? And then that list starts dwindling as you go up the ladder. The next one, if he wins a 6th, there's only 14 plus him, 15 people who will have won 6. And if he gets 2 more, and he's only 33, right? If he gets 2 more to 7, now he's in only 12 people. I mean, he has the capabilities of winning some of these tournaments, and you know, 2 more majors. Listen, do we think he's going to win 8 and get to Tiger's 15? Probably not, right? You know, 10 more rather to get to Tiger's 15? Probably not. But could he win 2-3 more? Yeah, it's possible. And that really puts him up there with some of the greatest golfers we've ever seen and some of these guys who have just won a lot of majors. Now, Kev?
You know, 4 or 5 years ago when he was winning, I think it was back-to-back in both the PGA and the U.S. Open, he had 4 majors within a 2-year stretch, and all of a sudden, if I remember, it was the knee injuries that really started to affect him. He's healthy. Yeah. And that's a big thing. If he keeps his health, and if he keeps that knee okay, maybe playing the lighter tournament schedule of the LIV tournament. You know, they've got far fewer events, and they only play 54 holes every when they do play the tournament. Maybe that's better for his long-term health and long-term, you know, stability of that knee, and gives him a chance to win. You know, especially, you know, you go back. You know, golfers are still in their primes going into 36, 37, 38 years old. It's only when they get to the real later stages of the 30s when they start maybe losing a little bit. So he's still got 4 or 5 years of his prime, I think, to add in, you know, at least 2 or 3 majors.
I think he's got a legit chance at 10. I really do. I think it's legit. And the reason why I do think that, because A, he's healthy. B, he's competitive. Still, he's still got 2 of the – he's never won 2 of them, right?
Yeah.
So he's never won the British and he's never won the Masters, correct? He's won the U.S. and he's won the PGA.
U.S. So twice,
He's that committed, driven guy. Listen, I don't like him personally to watch because he's a little arrogant. He's very much, I don't know. He's got a little bit of an arrogance I don't enjoy about golf. He doesn't seem like he appreciates the moment. I think he thinks he's above everybody. But you know what? Doesn't change the fact he's a great player. I'm not saying that Phil or Tiger in their primes weren't arrogant too. He just shows it a little bit easier. Like, he doesn't seem to have regard for others. But the guy can flat out play every game. And he started off with really meager start. He was playing like a backup, like European League type thing. That's why the weather didn't bother him so much on Saturday. He was used to it. He was playing in Ireland and stuff like that, yeah, where it rains every weekend. And he just, while everybody else was struggling like crazy, shooting four over, five over, this guy's shooting four under, two under, whatever it was. Was it four under on Saturday or three under, something
four,
like
four
that?
Under, four under, two strokes better than anybody.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And, yeah, and there was a bunch of guys that I thought, you know, played well in the rain, and he just dwarfed them all. He just made it. That was his move. And we said it. I said it last week when we were talking about Koepka. I'm like, I think the delays hurt him in the last tournament, and he got to play all the way through. And he jumped out. He went to -9 real quick on Sunday. Yep. And Hovland was sitting at -5. And then Hovland, I to his credit, battled back, cut it to like minus. He was down one, and then Koepka just kind of pulled away. And it was really, who's going to finish second, Hovland or Scheffler? That's really what it came down to.
Okay.
None of the other guys really made a run.
Okay. And the other big thing that happened last weekend was the Preakness took place. Derby winner Mage finished third. Blazing Sevens finished second. And the Bob Baffert National Treasure finished number one. He went off it as a 5-2 shot. Darren, can you talk to us a little bit about the Preakness?
Bob Baffert is back. And what a day, a roller coaster day for him. He had to euthanize a horse earlier in the day. And he was emotional when they were talking to him about that other horse he had to put down. I mean, people don't realize what this sport can do. And you know, they do fall in love with these animals and stuff like that. This was one of those races. It was the opposite of the Derby. They come out in 23-9, the halves in 48-9. There was no pace. And what happened was, you know, just National Treasure was able to control the pace. And you know, Mage stayed a little closer than he usually does for a dead closer, but still didn't have enough to really kind of fight through. I thought it was interesting. I thought the horse that really confused me was Coffee with Chris, because this is the horse that's supposed to have speed, doesn't press at all, and then finishes last anyway. It was like that they had no plan for this horse, the Maryland bred. They had no plan. Either you try to steal the race or don't run. And he didn't try to steal the race at all. And basically, he just gave this race to National Treasure. And, you know, listen, you got Baffert and you got Velasquez. You got the combination that you feel like can beat any combination at any point, any time in horse racing history. These guys are that good, and they did it. And the way that race ended, it looked like, you know, Kevin liked Blazing Sevens. He was on him. Looked like Blazing Sevens was going to win it halfway through that stretch. And all of a sudden, just a little bit of a nudge in the last, I don't know, maybe last 15, 20 yards. Gave him like the head win. I mean, it was a really nice race by National Treasure. Great job by Baffert and Velasquez. Kev, thoughts?
Yeah, like you said, Coffee with Chris. If you look at the Preakness charts after the fact, you know, he broke first, but quickly settled into that second hole. And like you said, with that slow a pace, he needed to push it more to have any chance, and he didn't. National Treasure with Velasquez up. You know, when you watch the replay, I think they pointed out when they were showing the replay, when he broke from the gates, he was inside. He had a little clearance. He moved out to about the third slot. And all of a sudden, he's making all the horses on the outside run even further. I mean, I took Blazing Sevens. He lost by half a length, was it, I think?
Yeah, basically.
He ran at least an eighth of a mile longer, I felt like. Blazing Saddles felt like he was five wide the whole way.
Well, Blazing Saddles is a movie, but Blazing
Sevens. I mean, Blazing Sevens. Yeah. Thanks for the correction.
I'm just here to help.
I appreciate it. But, you know, when you're watching, I mean, first off, when you had, what's his name, scratched, the first mission was scratched.
Which was the real horse that we thought could threaten.
So that's when we thought it could threaten. So now and from our preview last week, you know, you take him out, we're down to about three horses that had a chance. They wound up in the top three. No surprises there. Even the betting public didn't know what to do. I think the long shot went off at 10-1.
Yeah, it was
it was just
wide open.
Wide open. and
Jason Chaos, which didn't belong in the race, by the way, with his best buyer being 83, went off at like 10-1.
Yeah, that horse should have been about 70-1.
Yeah, pretty much. I think the horse is still running, Kev.
Yeah. Like I said, it was a slow pace, nothing going on. Blazing Sevens pressed, but couldn't get past, couldn't get his nose in front at all. And honestly, it was a bit of a boring race. I hate to say it.
The funny thing is, if you're a horse racing fan, you find that race boring. If you're a regular fan, you see a close race at the end, and you're not you're not watching where horses are supposed to be or where you – I say this as someone that bets horses. You guys do as well.
Yep.
The way I bet him and the way you bet him, Kev, I know, and G somewhat, is we visualize where we think the horses are around the track at certain points.
Yep.
With the fraction number I'm looking for at the quarter, with the fraction I'm looking for at the half for my horse. Now, if I like the front runner and I'm running 49 like he did the other day,
I'm
ecstatic.
Yeah.
If I like a horse that's sitting off the pace at the 49, I don't like it. If I like a closer, I know I have no shot. If I see 24 like I saw in the first quarter, I'm like, that's not what I want to see. I need a big second quarter, otherwise nothing happens. And so when you're watching it as a horse racing fan, you're saying this is not even tactically fun. I mean, Velasquez and Baffert are toying with everybody else. Nobody's going to beat this horse. You knew that at the halfway point. But if you're just someone that picked number 5 and you're like, oh, he's coming, he's finished 4th, but he tried. It's a totally different game. It's just that if you follow the sport and love the sport like we do, it's a totally different feel.
Yep.
And you're just like, it was really anticlimactic. I mean, the finish was great because Blazing Sevens made the move and thought you were going to pass him in the stretch. But then, just that pull away from National Treasure at the end was all of it. G, any thoughts on the race?
No, I think you guys basically have said everything it is. I mean, it started out I thought the way they broke from the gate that this was going to be a good race. And then after they hit the quarter mark, it was kind of like, okay, I think we have who's going to win. And there was really not a lot going on from that point forward. So
now it wasn't a good field. The Belmont should be wide open. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the Belmont. I think we're going to get more horses in the Belmont than we did in the Preakness, which doesn't happen very often.
Well, you'll also get the Derby winner in it, of Mage. You'll get the Preakness winner, National Treasure, in it. And then you'll get some of those horses that were in the Derby that didn't get that didn't place, that didn't run in the Preakness. You'll have them at the Belmont.
You'll have
like
Angel of Empire
Forte
running. We might see Forte. We might not, but we might. Yep. That was supposed to be the favorite for the Derby. So you might see the Derby favorites running. So there could be some stuff that makes it interesting. I don't know. I'm excited to see a good Belmont because that race is just like the longest stretch in the world. It's like you have the lead at the top and you don't feel safe until your horse crosses that damn line because that race never ends.
We've been at Belmont way too many times to see the front runner make the turn. And it's like, come on, where's the line?
Where's the line? We thought we're golden at the quarter pole.
And they finished last.
I mean, that's what it is.
Yep.
All right. So we'll move on to a little NBA. Finals are coming up. We have one team in. The Nuggets are in. Took care of the Los Angeles Lakers in 4 games. In the other semifinals, we have Miami up 3-1 on Boston. Really looked like last night Miami was going to take it over, and then Boston had a great second half, came back, wound up winning that game to force a game 5. Kev, Denver. 4 games to none against the Lakers. Clearly, Jokic was just way too powerful for everybody. Any thoughts?
In the series, Jokic went for almost 28 points, 11 rebounds, 14.5 assists. But Jamal Murray carried the offensive load. He had 32.5 points per game and chipped in with 6 rebounds, 5 assists also. But they also had production from the rest of their lineup. Michael Porter, Caldwell Pope, Gordon Brown, all average double figures in the series. They were a much deeper team than the Lakers were. LeBron put up nice numbers, You know, he was up near 28, 9.5 rebounds, 10 assists in the series, but he doesn't have that killer instinct. I feel like you just something in the big spot where you feel like you're fine with him having the ball. As long as the referees don't call those little ticky-tack fouls when he goes driving out of control down the lane, you feel like he's got to miss more than he makes, I feel like. But, you know, otherwise, it was the NBA semifinal, the conference finals have been boring, unfortunately.
I mean, listen, Jamal Murray has been the best player on the court. I know Jokic is doing all this with the stats and stuff. He's 7'3". He can pass over anybody. He can rebound over everybody, and I get it. Jamal Murray hits big shots. So does Michael Porter. I mean, these guys were good players in college, and Porter got hurt when he got drafted. He fell a little bit, didn't even play his first year. Really, really good player. I picked the Nuggets in five, so obviously I gave the Lakers way too much credit. Thing about it is, when you watch that series, Anthony Davis doesn't look like he's the superstar that everyone thought he was going to be. LeBron's shooting numbers were not impressive except for the first half of game four. And the best player on the court for the Lakers was an undrafted rookie named Austin Reeves most of the freaking tournament. He was shooting the ball really well. He was taking big shots. He seemed to be the only guy that wanted to take big shots. I'm not saying statistically you're going to have LeBron with more points per game. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying Austin Reeves, who's an undrafted, rookie, was lights out in that series. He was the only guy keeping the Lakers in a lot of the situations, I thought. Listen, I'm excited the Lakers are out, but let's remember something. The Nuggets were a one seed all year. The Lakers, for most of the season, was hanging around 10, 11, 12 even. So we didn't even think they were going to make the playoffs at some point. Got into the seven, found a way to beat Memphis, which obviously has some internal problems with Ja Morant again. Beat up a Warrior team that was underachieved most of the year. Not to insult either of these series. These are good wins for the Lakers. They made it further than they should have. The Nuggets basically showed that we're the one seed and we're the best team in basketball. I have a hard time thinking even the Heat or the Celtics, if they manage to come back, are going to be able to do much against this Denver team. I think they're that good.
Yeah.
And Miami up 3-0. Boston wins game four. They force game five. Kev, any comments?
Well, the first two games in Boston, Boston played well in the first half in both games. Game one, Heat outscored them 46-25 in the third quarter and cruised. Fourth quarter, again, the Celtics had the lead in the fourth quarter this time, and the Heat beat them 36-22 in the fourth quarter. Celtics have played really well for long stretches, but they disappeared for too long a stretch and for almost a full quarter in both games one and two. Game three wasn't close. Game four last night, once Boston took control, they pulled away and won easily. It's going to be interesting if Boston can hold serve in game five. Who's the pressure on in game six?
To me, it's on Miami. They have to win the series in six. You don't want to go back to seven in Boston.
Yep.
I mean, the thing about this series, Tatum disappears in fourth quarter sometimes, which is unacceptable for the best player on your team. Butler has shown he's the best player on the court. What it comes down to is this. Riley is the best evaluator of talent, and Spoelstra might be the best coach in the NBA.
Yeah.
They're playing with a bunch of guys that are undrafted guys or second-round guys. I mean, listen, you remember when Riley was the Knick guy. You got Starks and Mason and guys that no one gave a shot to. He's always been able to find guys like Gabe Vincent. He's always been able to figure out a way to get these guys on the court.
Yep.
And you got to just – I mean, listen, I don't like the Heat. I hate the Celtics, though, so I'm rooting for the Heat in this series. I picked the Celtics in seven, so there's still a chance. But
Celtics in five, chance. I think. Woo-hoo.
But, Miami's no eight seed. Miami's a really good team. They were technically the seventh seed during the season. They lost to Atlanta in the first round of the play-in tournament, and they end up getting the eighth seed. But if you're a Knicks fan, you got to feel pretty good about what you did now, because this team dismantled Milwaukee and they're dismantling Boston. The Knicks lost in six, and if anybody would have helped out Brunson, they would have sent that series to seven.
Yeah.
If anybody would have wanted to try to help out Brunson in game six, we left that Knicks series saying, oh, a little disappointed. But then you see what the Heat do to Boston, and you're like, My goodness, the Knicks weren't that bad. I still think they need to upgrade the Randle position. If you can get someone to play to be his sidekick that's a little better than Randle, I think it helps. But I watched this series thinking, wow, the Knicks are in better shape than I realized. That's what I've been watching most of this because I don't care for either team. So I'm just kind of comparing it that way. But Jimmy Butler, best player on the court every night.
Yeah, the Heat are getting contributions, I think, up and down the roster as well. You mentioned Tatum. He's had a couple of rough fourth quarters in the series, but Jaylen Brown also has been awful this series. He's shooting under 40%. He's shooting 12% from three in this series.
Oh, I agree, but Tatum's got to be
I mean, Tatum is the guy on the Celtics. But Brown, you always mention, you know, they're, you know, definitely one and two, and number two is not helping them at all.
I agree.
If Jay, you are going to say something? Yeah, if you're Adam Silver, Denver-Miami is not really the premier matchup you were hoping for in the NBA Finals here. However, if you do have Jokic and he is, you know, the number one player in the league, two-time MVP, it should give you a little bit of boost, but probably not going to be the matchup he was hoping for, Kev.
Here's the other problem. You know, Nuggets won Monday night. There was a chance.
Are we talking scheduling, Kev?
He could have won last night. They could have swept in four games, which would have been Tuesday. We record this on Wednesday. By the time we record this show next Wednesday, there will not have been a finals game. The finals do not start until Thursday, June 1st. The Nuggets are guaranteed to have 9 days off. The Heat might have up to 6 days off if they can close this out in game five. I know it's all about TV. I know it's all about money. But, my God, after a week off, how can anybody get into the finals at that point?
And then you got two teams that nobody cares about. I mean, fan bases don't care about. Miami doesn't sell out their own arena during the year, and Denver's not a big market. So you do all this, and listen, Denver's playing nice basketball. I mean, it's hard not to like watching that team. Jamal Murray has a quick release, gets shots off. But the fact that you're going to wait till June 1st, and there's no budging on this, and everything has to last until the middle to the end of June to make these guys happy is a joke. The scheduling for the NBA playoffs is horrible. It's been horrible forever. It's not new, but it's worse, though.
But even that, they Nuggets get 9 days off. They play game one Thursday. Even though they're in the city, there's no need to travel. They've got 2 days off. They don't get to play game two until Sunday.
It's a joke.
That'll be one game in almost 2 weeks.
It's just horrible. It's just horrible.
Yeah.
And anybody that doesn't complain about this is, you know, you will lose interest in the NBA before you start watching a game again. Unless Boston makes this a series, which is not impossible. You know, you get game five at home. All of a sudden you go game six. It's 3-2. All you got to do is steal a road game and you have a game. So anything can happen.
Yep.
But, you know, you can't like Denver coming off a 9-day layoff and then playing one game in 2 weeks. You really just can't like it. Question for you guys about LeBron. Is he done?
No, he wants to play with Bronny.
You think he's going to play with his son?
Yeah, that's what he wants to. I think he's going to stick around and see if he can get that done. I think if you listen to the podcast, you know, people know how I feel about LeBron. I do not like LeBron. Just something about his personality just turns me off. I respect his game. I respect that he's a great player. Definitely one of the top players in NBA history. You cannot ask him immediately after the game what you want to do. He's been playing for 20 years. The emotions right after the game, you don't know. I'm not in his shoes, but I can only imagine that at that point he's disappointed. He needs, you know, some time to think about it. But I think once he clears his head, he's going to realize he's still one of the better players in the league right now. And I think he really wants to stick around and see if he can play with Bronny. I really believe that.
Hey, listen, it might happen. I mean, I don't know if Bronny's a pro. He'll get drafted by whatever LeBron says. But I don't know if Bronny's a pro. I mean, I watch him. He's the number 19 player in the recruiting ranks this year. That means he's a high player. But you don't know how he's going to respond. We've seen guys in the top 10, top 15 that just don't play. We have to see. We have to see where Bronny fits in at USC. We have to see how he does. I'm sure he'll be fine. But, you know, there's no lock that this kid's going to – he's not his father.
No, no doubt.
He's not built like his father.
Nope.
He doesn't have the game like his father. So, I mean, Bronny's a shooter. Bronny's a spot-up guy. You know, he's got some athleticism. I'm not taking it away from him, but he's not – he doesn't have the physical gifts that his father had. I mean, if you're going to ask me to rank players all the time, I have LeBron third. Some people have him first. I have Jordan one. Jordan I have first. Kobe two. I have Jordan one, Kobe two, and I put LeBron three. Just because of killer instinct and what you mentioned earlier – and just physical attributes and the work ethic. I'm not saying LeBron didn't work hard. I just think that those two guys played in an NBA that was much more physical and had to get a lot more done in different times against harder teams. That's just my take on it.
And look at the Defensive Player of the Year awards he got. He always made first team defensive
Michael
All-NBA,
absolutely.
Jordan. So he did on both ends in a much more physical NBA.
He would get clotheslined and beaten up every night by Laimbeer, Rodman, Mahorn, Dumars, Isaiah. I'm not even talking about the Celtics that he had to get through as well. You know, Celtics may have looked like they were a pretty passing team, but they were physical too when you're going against McHale and Parrish and Bird. Bird was as dirty a player as there was and the best trash talker of all time. You know, so, just curious about your thought on LeBron. G, thoughts?
I think he's going to stick around, but I think the bigger question is, is he going to be able to sustain stuff that we saw this year, like getting to the conference finals? Because other than Anthony Davis, what other assets do they have on that team? And, you know, you want to tell me, right, but he needs to sign a contract.
Yeah.
Well, understand, he's going to do everything he can to lure Kyrie over there. Kyrie and him are guys. He's going to try to get Kyrie to leave Dallas. Make that a horrible Cuban move, and he's going to try to get him over there to be that other asset. Now, can you count on Kyrie for anything? Absolutely not. But that's going to be the guy he thinks is going to help him get over the top. So, I'm just saying if he's not a Laker, I'll be stunned.
We're taking a 20-year aging veteran of LeBron with Anthony Davis, who he can't count on to play 50 games, plus a crazy freaking Kyrie Irving. I mean, that's a hell of a wild card if you ever had one, let me tell
you. It certainly is. It certainly is. But that's where he's going to go. That's his guy.
Okay. All right, and let's move over to NHL. So Florida is up 3-0 on Carolina. Dallas is down 3-0 to Las Vegas at the moment. Looks like this is going to be very short-lived. And as we speak right now, Florida is up 3-2 on Carolina in the third period. So we may have a sweep coming here. We've been talking a lot about Florida. That you love these games, but you know what? I'm beginning to sense a pattern, and that is Florida is a good team with a goalie playing very well. The team is playing really well, but I don't think them playing all these close games is a result of them being that much better than everybody. I just think they don't have the offensive firepower to score 5 goals in a game. And every time I see them, I'm going down this road more and more with this team, is that they can't put anybody away. I mean, it took them 4 overtimes to beat Carolina in the first game, took them overtime in the second game, and then a 1-0 game in game 3. And right now they're playing a 3-2 in the third here. So, you know, Kev?
Yeah, we've had 9 goals in the first 3 games combined for the two teams. And really, they've played 4 games worth, or more than 4 games worth.
More than 4 games.
That first game, you know, Tkachuk scored 12 seconds left in the 4th overtime, the 6th longest game. At least game 2, he decided to end it early in the 2nd minute of overtime.
7 periods.
Yeah. Like you said, the difference has been Bobrovsky. This series, in the first 3 games, he's got a 0.69 goals against average. He's got a .978 save percentage. And this is a series that Carolina's been out shooting Florida every game by a good margin. Bobrovsky has stolen the series. Plain and simple, he has stolen the series. And that's what happens in the NHL. You get the hot goalie, you ride a hot goalie. You never know. We've seen it before where teams have won the Stanley Cup riding the hot goalie.
Yeah. Darren?
Was Correa shut out in the playoffs last night? I didn't know that. I thought he had a little bit more of it there, because he has had some successful playoff runs in the past, too. You're right. It's been Bobrovsky's show. I always have a trouble saying this fucking name. But Bobrovsky, let me say it right. I mean, and Matt,
there he's like me trying to say it.
Bobrovsky, it just throws me off. Matthew Tkachuk has become that gritty guy that finds a way to win the games for this team. And, you know, listen, I've watched this in his entire career as a Flame fan, so it pained me for him to want to leave, but he did. You know, Bennett's all over the place. They hit a lot. Carolina's a good team. Carolina walked through their first couple rounds without much of a problem, and they walked through the Devils. So I'm not going to take it that Florida's bad, G, and that they're just winning by hot goalie. I'm just going to say that they're beating a really good team at their own game, because they're and Anderson's been excellent. It's not like Anderson's been awful either. His stats are really good.
There's so much you can do. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying, though. I'm not saying that they're not good. They are a very good team, and Carolina is a very good opponent right now for them. But the more I watch them, the more I realize that I don't think they have the ability to beat these teams by 2 and 3 goals. I just don't see it. I don't see the offensive firepower to do it. That was my only point, but moving over
and it's a valid point. I mean, Barkov has not been good. He's their guy, right? You haven't seen Barkov really get the job done. I mean, it's been the Bennett and Tkachuk line that's been really the line that seems to make the big difference for this team. They're just hitting everybody. They control the puck well, and they give Bobrovsky good opportunities to see the puck coming in on him, and he's making great saves. Like, listen, would it surprise me if Carolina tied this game up in the last 15 minutes? No, because Carolina's been outplaying them most of the series. But they just find a way to get nudged a little bit here. And Florida's been, as you said, good enough. They haven't been great. Yeah. They're just good enough.
Yeah.
On the other side, Dallas, we had two overtime games there, too. And in Vegas, it looked pretty interesting. Then last night, Jamie Benn, who's not exactly a rookie, makes one of the dumbest penalties I've ever seen. I mean, apparently everybody hates Mark Stone, because everybody takes cheap shots at this guy all the time. I don't watch Vegas enough to know why everybody hates Mark Stone, but I've never seen a guy that's targeted as much as this guy. I mean, they go after him hard. He must be a gritty, dirty, nasty player. But for him to hit him and cross-check him in the face while he's laying on the ice, I mean, it was a blatant major. And Dallas, after losing two overtime games, had no life in their building last night, their first home game of the series, and it kind of stunned me. Vegas doesn't have great goaltending, but they did enough. Kev?
Yeah. Vegas scored the early goal, first minute or so of the game. Ben took that penalty in the second period, the second minute of the game.
Yep.
So they score on the major power play to make it 2-0 early and just lock down that game.
It was over.
And surprisingly, Dallas just had no response. And then Ben gets a 2-game suspension, so we'll see if it carries over into next year. Or was it reduced to 1?
No, I just had a point.
Oh, okay. But no, that was about it. Like I said, 2 overtime games. I mean, the first 5 games of the playoffs in the NHL finals, you know, 5-1 goal games, 4 of them into overtime. Last night was the first blowout. They've been good close games, but when it's 3-0 and 3-0, just doesn't feel like there's much juice in the series, though.
The thing about it is, Dallas, you want to talk about a team that doesn't seem to have any offensive firepower and hasn't had it most of the playoffs, except for a couple of games in the last series. Dallas has a hard time putting the puck in the net. I mean, absolutely. You got Minsk and you got Robertson. And this is not a team that can really come from behind. I mean, their line that everybody knows is, you know, I mean, you know, you're talking about Ben, you're talking about older players, you know, guys that are you know, this is a team that's not going to score 4 in a night very often. So they rely on Ottinger to keep them in every game. And he gave up an early goal yesterday, which took the entire crowd out of it a minute in, like you said, Kev. And then the major right after, they score another goal. And 5 minutes in, Dallas was quiet. They were jumping up like going crazy going into that game. And, you know, I guess I was a little stunned that Dallas came out so unprepared and flat for game three, because I don't expect them to win a game now. And I picked Dallas to win this series in seven. I don't think Dallas wins a game. I think this is a sweep. You know, that's just my take on it now.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Let's move over. Go ahead, Jeff.
Two other quick hockey points. Number one, the Rangers head coach search. Two of the names that you've heard floated about are Mike Babcock and, I hate to see this guy go there, Peter Laviolette. I love Laviolette.
I've heard Laviolette the most, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I've always liked Laviolette. He's done well with the Islanders, the Canes, the Flyers, the Predators. He's won everywhere he's gone. He could be the type of winning coach that team needs. And the other hockey point, next year they're already talking the outdoor games. They're talking two games at MetLife, back-to-back days. You've got Rangers Islanders the first day and Devils Flyers the second day, both outdoors at MetLife. That should be fun. That's a fun hockey weekend in this area.
It yeah. certainly is.
Okay. Before we get to baseball, let's just tackle. We had one bit of news from the NFL this week, and that is one rule change. It's going to be a one-year trial run, and any fair catch inside the 25-yard line, the ball is automatically going to be placed at the 25-yard line. I'm not crazy about it, but I'll pass it to you guys to hear your thoughts. Kev?
I think they've got the same rule in college.
They do.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. They're trying to make the game safer. At this point, with the rules they've put in place, why not just eliminate the kickoff at this point? Just give the offense the ball to 25. I know they're talking about, you know, all the more concussions seem to happen on the kickoff than on any other play. And some coaches started to take advantage. You know, you move the kickoff up. Okay, let's start a pooch. You know, let's get that high short one and let's pin the team deep. I mean, it was a great strategy. You've seen how many times where you do that short kick and they're inside the 15. You take away that. Why have the kickoff anymore? You've changed the rules so much. Why even bother having it?
The problem to deal with, though, is that you will lose some special teams players and you may lose roster spots.
Yep.
I mean, that's the one thing. You won't need as many guys that are the aces on special teams because you don't need that kickoff coverage. I'm not saying that's the end-all, be-all. I don't like the rule because, listen, the kickoff has always been one of the more exciting plays in the game. I know what they're trying to do. Andy Reid ripped it to shreds today. I mean, you know, there's a lot of coaches that don't like it, but this is what it is. I mean, you know, they're trying to make safety the paramount thing in the league. And like you said, Kev, that's what they're looking at. I don't like it, but I don't like any of the rules that they put in for the most part. I like the physicality of the sport.
I mean, and I think as Jeff fans, you know, that was one of the few bright spots we had with special teams was the kickoff returns. But Westhoff was special teams mm-hmm. coach and helping out and overseeing some of the advisory stuff through the 2010s a lot. You know, seeing Leon Washington returning kickoffs for touchdowns and you're taking that part of the game away. And there's
Chad Morton, you know, guys like that. Yeah. I mean, we've always had guys that can run. Bruce Harper.
Yep.
Jet fans have always had. I mean, they've killed the onside kick. I mean, they've made that almost impossible.
But we did recover one last year.
I know. It was the Cleveland game. It was a miracle.
That was a miracle,
but,
yep.
But it's almost impossible to get those. They're really making every kickoff a little bit more challenging than it needs to be, in my opinion.
Okay. And let's move on to some baseball. We got the Yankees, who are hot at the moment. They're 8-2 in their last 10 before today. 30-20 on the year. The Mets 6-4 before today. 25-24. Where you guys want to start, Kev? You want to talk Mets to start?
Sure. You know, fortunately, they've lost the last two in Chicago. They haven't played well in Wrigley in years. Before that, they took 2 out of 3 from Tampa, swept Cleveland. The kids seem to have injected some life, injected some energy into the team, into the fans. When I go there, like I said, really, I went to the game Sunday night. I was thrilled when I saw Gary Sanchez catching the early game Sunday so that I could see Alvarez behind the plate. And why the hell is Gary Sanchez on this team? What is he doing? And what was he starting last night? You had a doubleheader Sunday. They both started. They were off Saturday because of the rainout. They had the day off Monday. Why is Alvarez not catching last night? Why is Gary Sanchez even getting at bats on this team? Last I remember, he can't hit. He's a 200 hitter. Has occasional home run, and he can't catch. That's the last I remember of him, was being benched in the playoffs for the Yankees.
Listen, I want to see Alvarez play, but he can't play every game.
I'd rather see him right now playing every day until.
I understand
sitting them one of the games of doubleheader, no doubt about it. But there's no reason not to play him last night.
He played today. He hit a home run. I mean, he's going to play. He just can't catch every game. I mean, it's not first base.
Sanchez should be your right-handed DH if you feel like you want him to be your power and he gets into a groove. That's really what his role is now. Catch one day a week. And if you want to play him one or two games as a right-handed DH to see if he's got any spark, that's all he's got. You're not looking for him to be your guy. And to be honest, you want Vientos to be playing your DH spot most of the time. Anyway. Yeah. You just do.
I think Vientos is the one that's going to get hurt here. I think Vientos looks like the type of guy that if he sits, I think he's going to get out of whack. He's not going to contribute as well as he could if he's playing pretty regularly.
Agreed. How would you, Kev, how would you force all three kids into the lineup?
Well, I'd sit Vogel back.
Me too.
More often than not. So
you're going to play Beatty at third?
Let Vientos play third once in a while and just try to get, you know.
No, but if you're going to force all three of them into the lineup, Alvarez is going to catch, Beatty's going to play third. And what are you doing with Vientos?
DH, occasionally in third.
Okay, no, but if Beatty's playing third, if you're forcing all three of them in the lineup, and
then he's
going to
DH more often than not.
So Vientos is going to be basically your DH.
Yeah.
Okay.
Vogelbach is supposed to bring power. In 100 at bats so far, he's got two home runs. He's got a slugging percentage of .333. Why is he in the lineup?
I'm not against it. I'm just trying to establish what you want to do because, you know,
If he's not going to be playing more often than not, send him back down to AAA. Why have him up here?
Because then you get fans like you saying, why is Vientos in the minor leagues ripping everything?
If you're not going to play him,
well, he wants Marcioffi as well. I mean, let's say Kevin wants four rookies in the lineup, not three.
you're thinking Mauricio?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's been playing second base for, what, 2 weeks?
I think it's time.
I'm fine giving him a good month to make sure he's comfortable.
The ball down there, though, man. I'm telling you.
But you know, everybody's so concerned about the defense. I mean, I think Beatty's done a good job defensively at third.
He's fine.
Alvarez has been far better than I thought he would be behind the plate. He's up over 250 now, and he started off 1-for-15. Remember that. You take away that 1-for-15 start when he first got called up. Now you're looking at batting average about .280, .290 over almost a solid month. He's producing. You got to move up out of the nine holes also.
I agree.
I mentioned earlier, I did go to the second game Sunday night, the 2-1 win. Pitcher's duel, Verlander, Bieber, 2 hours and 6 minutes.
Gino's ecstatic.
7 o'clock start. I was very happy to be such a catch 22. I was very happy to be out of there quickly. But here I am, you know, okay, the half inning's over. I go up, I go to use the bathroom, I come back, and they're already, you know, I missed a half an inning or more. Then you go up to the concession stand, you get your kid a soda and get myself a beer or two. Come back, and you miss another inning. You know, what about just sitting back and enjoying the game also? We don't need the game 2 hours and 6 minutes.
What time did you get home, Kev?
There's got to be a happy medium.
There's
Kev.
A happy medium
gotta
somewhere.
Be something at 2:20, 2:30.
What time did you get home, Kev?
Well, yeah, going up to southern Canada there, I was home at 11:30.
It's not brutal.
Sounds like a wonderful evening.
Game was too rushed. I think so, but you have to go up and use the bathroom. You come back down, you've already missed how much of the game. I like to enjoy watching baseball. I want to be there for a little while. I want to enjoy the pace of the game. And this just felt too rushed. But anyway, that's my rant on baseball.
I'm going to take a quick take on the Mets and the Mets fan. Yeah. You may not love it here, but I'm enjoying watching the kids too. I've never seen it. It's like watching the Jet fan base, watching the Met fan base. They win a regular season game. Everybody's posting the SNY cover that they've done something amazing. They beat a Cleveland team with your two best pitchers on Sunday, a team that can't hit the ball out of the infield. I mean, you pitch around Ramirez, nobody can hit on that team. They did get the Clase. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on the Friday night win. But Clase's got four losses this year. Everybody's gotten the Clase a little bit. He does get saves and stuff like that. And the win on Thursday against Tampa was against a pitcher that had a 15 ERA in the minors. So, yeah. I mean, the Met fan is acting like they did something amazing. The Yankees swept Cincinnati this weekend.
They did the Mets couldn't.
Well, the Yankees did it with freaking Brito. Severino hadn't thrown a pitch in like 4 months, you know. And they did it with Cortez, who hadn't looked good. I'm just saying the Yankee fan doesn't overrate. The Met fan gets so excited after every win. And I know the Mets, there's a reason for it. A lot of comebacks, a lot of come from behind wins, a lot of excitement. You expect Lindor to hit against his old team. If you didn't expect him to pitch play well in that series, then you're not expecting him to play at all. But the amount of excitement you hear about Met fans about winning a 2-1 game and 38,000 people posting on Facebook, we win. Like, you won the game that Verlander is throwing at home. I just feel like it's like watching a Jet game. The overreactions up and down on a Met fan is the same as a Jet fan. It's over the top. But you know what? Love watching the kids play. Yep. Vientos has to be in the lineup 5 days a week. Yep. Beatty has to be in the lineup 7. Alvarez has to be in the lineup 5 to 6. You know, Beatty shouldn't sit. He really shouldn't. If you want to sit him, he DHs. Vientos shouldn't really sit. If you want to play Vogelbach once or twice a week, you got me. You know, you bring him up, you let him play. I know Gino critiqued it a little bit last week when we talked about it with Volpe. I have no problem with Volpe. I know he's hitting 215. I don't care. He's got 7 homers. He's stealing bases. He's all over the field, and he's fun to watch. I love watching these Met young players play. They are fun to watch. And, you know, and listen, obviously the polar bear is the polar bear. Yeah. You know, let's have the F-bomb right after the game, after we did our show the other night, which is awesome. My buddy Rob Rush was the doing the stadium announcements that day. He's like, did you hear what he did last night? And he's like, I'm like, I didn't right away. I was like, I saw it on the highlight. He goes, I had to go on the mic right afterwards and switch right off into something else because he let it go. But there's genuine excitement. I don't get the air hump. I don't find it to be a good celebration. I think the Met celebrations are always a little bit messed up. They do dry humps, air humps. He's banging everybody. I don't really get it. That's his thing, Alonso. Whatever works, because he's got 18 homers and he can do whatever the hell he wants. You know what? He's a superstar. But I'm going to pose a question. I'm going to post this on Facebook tomorrow. Who's more valuable to their team, Alonso or Judge? G, I'm going to start with you, because Kevin's more thoughtful.
Thanks.
Judge, because without Judge, this lineup is a disaster right now.
I have a tendency to agree with you, but I know we're both Yankee fans. So, Kev, Alonso or Judge, who's more valuable to their team? It's such a good question. That's the only reason why I ask it.
That's too hard a question, Darren. Thanks.
I gave you extra time.
Part of me says, same reason as Gino said, I mean, Harvin says Judge. You saw it when he was missing for a couple games there, and when he had no Judge, no Stanton, and that lineup was bad. But if you take away Alonso from the Met lineup, boy, they've got no other power, though.
I'm just saying, if you had to pick the New York MVP right now.
The New York MVP?
The New York MVP, the best player in New York right now.
That's all right. So the only thing is that's coming off, you know, a 9-game stretch where Judge has 8 home runs and 17 RBIs. I mean, I don't know.
He's coming off the DL before that, though. You got to remember that he's coming off.
Well,
the DL.
I know, but I mean, you're asking the question after a 9 games that he's just been incredibly hot.
Alonso has won games for the Mets in the last week.
I know.
He's hit major homer after major homer after major homer. It's not like Alonso has been like nothing. He's been amazing.
He's got 19. He's on pace. He's on pace for 19, 60.
I'm sorry.
He's on pace for 60.
He's trying to beat Judge's record. It's a real. I just think it's a good question because I think both players are amazing, and the Yankees can't win without Judge, and I don't think the Mets can win without Alonso. I think it's really close. I just think that the Mets. I think the Mets have more talent in their lineup than the Yankees, though.
But they have to get going.
No, no doubt about it. On the back of the baseball card, not what they're doing right now. The Yankees' second best player right now is Harrison Bader. You know, I mean, or you could say it's Torres. I mean, there's not much.
Rizzo. You know,
the Mets. What?
Rizzo.
Well, you could put Rizzo up there too. I know he's hitting, but Rizzo can go with the slumps when he doesn't have anybody around him. Rizzo's easy pitch to. When he's got somebody to protect him, he can do it.
I mean, for God's sakes, do we have to have DJ LeMahieu hitting fourth? I mean, I don't get this team.
Gino's wanted to walk the team. He's, how do you feel about Hicks being DFA, Jake?
At least Hicks is off the team.
Gino, you got to be excited about that. Hicks is off the team?
Yeah, I mean, at least Hicks is off the team. It's a sad situation right now. I mean, I can't believe
best record in baseball in May right now belongs to the Yankees. They're only 5 behind the Rays, who got off to that killer start. But the team in between them is the Orioles.
Orioles, yeah.
Orioles still play well, but you got to love what Judge did last night. He tied it up last night late, and they won it in extras. You know, the Yankees are playing great ball right now. Severino coming back at the right time is really helpful. They need that extra arm. But, of course, Herman has to get suspended, so I got to watch more starts from Clark Schmidt. And, by the way, Clark Schmidt was the guy to pitch Friday. It wasn't freaking Cortez. I had to watch. Clark Schmidt got a win for me, and I hate that guy. Oh, my God. I got to watch him for another 2 weeks, another week and a half. Gee, what do you think about what's going on with the Yanks?
Listen, they got hot. It was inevitable because they keep going up and down. I just don't like the club right now. I hate that LeMahieu's hitting fourth. You're playing way too much of kind of falafel for me.
They got a homer tonight.
I know. Listen, I'm not taking a half game, you know, one at bat, but, you know, Jake Bowers is our DH. I mean, LeMahieu's starting at third and batting fourth. And this is not the Yankee team I want to see. Let's put it that way.
I get it. I do get it.
Again, I'm going to state this for you one more time. I hope you're listening, Mr. Darren. I do not hate Volpe. I like Volpe. But
doesn't sound like
if you have a team that isn't hitting and he hits 205, he needs to hit better.
I'm not disagreeing, but do you want to play somebody for him, or you want to let him hit himself out of it?
Again, the point I made last week was, had Peraza come up here and hit the ball very well for 6 games, you may have had Volpe go down and Peraza stay up here. He didn't. And that's where we are right now. But for his home runs and stolen bases, he's still only hitting 205. I mean, his on base is not even 300.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm saying is that I'm fine with it. It doesn't bother me nearly as much as it bothers you. I'm okay with this kid hitting in the bottom of the order, hitting 200. Hitting an occasional homer and being
Darren,
the guy.
Darren, he doesn't bother me. The guy that bothers me is LeMahieu, and you know that.
Yeah.
That's bothering me.
Donaldson has started his rehab assignment.
And that doesn't make me enthusiastic about the situation either.
Well, do you want Donaldson or you want LeMahieu at third? Who do you want?
Neither.
I don't want either.
No. You want Brett Beatty at third?
I like Brett Beatty. The Yankees. Imagine him
with that lefty in the Yankee Stadium. Jeez.
He would do well. Simple fact is that the Yankees have work to do. I watched this bullpen. It still scares me. They blew the lead tonight already. I don't like anything about this bullpen. I blame Brian Cashman for everything except for the Bader Montgomery trade. I do not like what he put together on this. I mean, I'm not going to blame him for Rodon because nobody knew, but I can certainly blame him for thinking that this bullpen is good enough. You get frustrated with third base. I watch this bullpen and I cry every freaking night. I have no faith in any of these guys to get anybody out ever. And I used to like Marinaccio a little bit, and I don't even like him anymore. And I don't like Abreu. And I don't like Cordero. And I don't like Holmes. I don't like any of them. I don't like Wandy. I don't trust Wandy to get people out. And he's my closer now, who's a journeyman lefty, who's got to be my closer. This is awful. This is what this idiot put together. This is what this moron did with a $200 million payroll. I can't get past it. And you got to feel the same way, Kev, watching Ottavino blow games and all these other guys. You got a bunch of journeyman middle relievers, too. Yeah, at least your closure's been good. And you can't blame Diaz because that's not his fault.
Yeah, I mean, we said it last week, going into the season, when you thought you had Diaz closing and Robertson as your setup guy, main setup guy, then you throw in, you know, your Raleys, your Ottavinos, your Smiths to get you the sixth and seventh innings. You felt like you had a good, solid bullpen deep. And Diaz's injury just sets everything back. And between that and the lack of length from your starting pitching, too many nights where the bullpen's coming in the fifth or sixth inning.
Well, hopefully Verlander and Scherzer can fix that as you go, because that'll be a big deal.
Yeah.
Don't know what the kid's going to do, any of the other guys. McGill's not going to be that guy that's going to give you that length usually. But, hopefully the big two can kind of start doing it.
Yep.
I don't know. I get your point, though, Gino. I know Volpe's not hitting. I'm willing to accept it.
Okay.
If he's hitting 140, I have a different feel. If he's hitting 205, 210, I can live with it.
Listen, the whole damn team is other than the last 10 games when they seem to have caught a little fire, the whole team hasn't really hit
great. Not green.
And I am glad, by the way, that Aaron Hicks is no longer on this team.
I'm stunned.
Hey, how about any that Blue Jays game?
Any other baseball stuff, guys?
Kevin's about to mention something.
How about the Rays score the other night against Toronto? 20-1.
20-1. And then they lose the next night because they scored 20 in one night. They lose 7-3 today.
Yep.
One other, I just wanted to bring up one thing because it doesn't happen very often. There was actually a really good boxing match this weekend. Yeah, Devin Haney and Lomachenko fight. Lomachenko moving up in weight and a little bit like that. Haney won the decision. I had Lomachenko winning 115-113. But Haney won 115-113, 115-113, 116-112. Carolina just tied it up, by the way. So that series, that series could move on 3-3. We don't see a lot of good boxing anymore. It was a really, really good fight if you watched it. There was a little bit of bad blood beforehand, but they each earned each other's respect. Now you're going to see Haney probably fight Shakur Stevenson, which is another really good fight. I know UFC is the dominant thing and I get it, but when you get to watch a good boxing match, it's always fun. Just my take on that. Jake?
Yeah. That's all I got.
All right. Kev, anything else?
Well, no, the quick horse racing point. I forgot to mention it when we were talking about it. 2000 Kentucky Derby winner Fusaichi Pegasus passes away today. He had to be euthanized because of old age. We remember... I mean, we love horse racing, so we remember the great Fusaichi Pegasus.
Hell of a horse. Hell of a horse.
Great, great, great horse.
Carolina has tied this game 3-3, by the way.
Yep.
Yeah, Darren mentioned that a minute ago.
I said that just like I don't pay attention to you, you don't pay attention to me.
And real quick, one other baseball note. The A's in Vegas, or the state of Nevada, have reached a tentative agreement on funding for the stadium. They're looking to build a 30,000-seat stadium, the southern end of the strip where the Tropicana is. Looks like the A's are moving to Vegas.
They're 10-40 going into tonight. They're playing some good baseball.
Oh, they're on pace.
10-40.
10-40. Right. They're playing 200 ball. They're on pace for 32 wins.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Ty Johnson ripped the Jets staff a little bit. Becton ripped the Jets staff a little bit. Rogers got tweaked his calf. Things are all fun and happy over in Jetland.
And Quinn still doesn't have the contract extension.
Yeah, a lot of fun things going on in Jetland. Hopefully we get some of these things fixed soon.
Yep.
Outside of that, we'll wrap it up here. We are – oh, Gino's got one point. I'm sorry, buddy.
One other point in the Champions League soccer finals will be on June 10th. Inter Milan versus Manchester City. Should be an interesting fight. Darren, close it out.
Well, and there's one episode left of the season for Ted Lasso for those don't watch the regular soccer, but do watch it on watch fake soccer with Ted Lasso. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful world of sports. We try to entertain you every week. Please like the broadcast, download it anywhere you can get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever. Also, we do post a lot on social media. We try to post a different point every day at least. Comment, share, like, do all the fun things that we want you to do. Let us know what you want to hear more of. Paul, hockey season's over. I'm not going to be able to talk about it much more. Maybe another couple of weeks. That's it, Paul. But I need you to keep listening. And anyway, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.